Blog Talk Radio.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. Oh, 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 oh. Oh yeah. Oh, no. 365 days of motivation and personal empowerment. Jet and Marvin Rowan and a group. Come to your life. We got a good show for you today. We're taking the steps toward community healing with Dr. Ram and Sister Krista. Coming right up in just a minute. Let's blow y'all. Come on. Let's go. Better love. There is no better love than for self and kind. No better love. Welcome to the 365 days of motivation and personal empowerment just for you. We got a great show coming up for you today. We're going to talk about taking those steps toward community healing, right? Call a friend. If you're African-American, you need to, right? We need to come together. And if you ask anybody, right, from around, people of color in general, we got to come together. We do. We got to coalesce. We got to get some work done. And it's going to be up to us to do the work. We're going to have to commit to that, right? We're going to have to commit to restructuring, right, or recapturing, like we're talking about here, the African mind. And so we're doing the Re-African Mind series today. We're recapturing it, right, shaping and molding it and making it what it's supposed to be. Okay, so let's talk about the tenets of the NAAEA before we get started. The mission of the National African American Empowerment Association is to ensure that the needs of the African American community are met through the development of programs and services, support, inspire, motivate, and empower each member, each person, each member of our group. Who's doing that, right? It's collective thought now saying we're going to look out for each other. We're going to develop programs and activities that educate and develop our children and our families, right? Strengthen collaborations on every level, right? Because that's where the work needs to be done. So there are five critical areas. I won't be long on it. But the peace concept, politics, economics, athletics, culture, and education. So let's start with the P real quick. Politics, we need a political agenda. I'll say it over and over again, right? We don't need just one black judge. We need representation, right, on all levels in the system, right, as we master the system. Okay, so it's about system mastery, understanding the federal system, understanding the system of capitalism and how the American system work, and educate ourselves on that. You need a political, you need to learn the law. You do. And then we got to move on over to economics. We need an economic platform and an economic agenda. We got the money. We do. We just give it away. Right? So how about learning the value of money, the value of saving and investing, right? Understanding how to use a dollar to benefit our community and ourselves so we can build. We got to do it. And now the A. A is athletics, right? Health, wellness, fitness, nutrition. We got to take care of ourselves. Are you doing that? Did you do that this week? If not, you can start today. Get you a basic plan, right? A health and wellness plan that looks at your food, look at your diet, your rest, those things that are necessary for you to take care of your physical and mental health. We're talking about both, right? Taking care of that mind, right? Let's move on over to culture now. We need relevant cultural programs like this one and many others that educate mainstream black people, period, right? And our educated elite as well, which some of them know. We need to do that. We have to have cultural guidelines and rules of engagement for our people. We just do. We must do that. And lastly, is education. That's that comprehensive education that takes us back to where we belong mentally, physically, emotionally, socially, and culturally. And that's what we must do. It's the Stan Macklin moment. Man, Stan, the deck is packed today. I can hear you. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I hear you. I hear you.
Yeah, man, we got the deck.
I just love it when you're able to explain the pillars of the National African American Empowerment Association. You know, when we have institutions that define our own reality, quit trying to get in to fit in. This is where it's at, and this is what we're doing. But we must unify And don't let's not sabotage ourselves. We should not look as to what we can't do. We can do all things. We can do it. And so we got to quit trying to mimic other races and be who we are, original kings and queens, and make a difference.
I like that.
Right here on Earth.
That's so true. We got to do it, y'all. We have to do it. Who else is going to do it? No one else in this world, nobody else in this country is going to have to do the work that we're going to have to do for ourselves. It's just as simple as that. We're going to have to be able to get the work done, right? And it's creating institutions that define our own reality is the beginning. So we'll move on. It's time for our Kwanzaa and Willie Lynch segment with Brother George coming right up. You coming in, brother? Oh, yeah. All right, Brother George, are you there?
Yes, sir, I am. Yes, sir.
Welcome to the show. How are you?
Thank you. Thank you. I'm doing great, brother. I'm doing great. Today's principle I'd like to use is Kuji Chagaliya. To define ourselves, which is self-determination. To define ourselves, name ourselves, create for ourselves and speak for ourselves. And I think that's really my favorite. It's always been, you know, because I love the idea of us representing ourselves because I'm a black nationalist. That's my position right there. Now, during the Willie Lynch segment today, I want to read out of a book called Nile Valley Contributions to Civilization, and it's by Brother Anthony Browder. He's a doctor now, Dr. Anthony Browder. And I want to start out by reading a piece about the book by Dr. John Henry Clark. The civilization of Egypt and of Africa in general is the most written about and least understood of all known subjects. This is not an accident or an error in misunderstanding the available information. Except for Egypt, African people have been programmed out of the respectable commentary of history. Europeans have claimed the non-African creation of Egypt in order to downgrade the position of African people in world history. They have laid the foundation of what they call Western civilization on a structure that the Western mind did not create. In doing so, they have used no logic. Egypt, a Nile Valley civilization, was already old before Europe was born. Nile Valley civilization also existed before the Western Asian civilization of the Tigris and the Euphrates River. This fact was acknowledged for years by the European academic hypocrites who thought they had gotten away with claiming Egypt as a European or at least an Asian creation. The archaeological research of Europeans disproved their claim. They could not find a single artifact in West Asia or in mainland Asia that was older than the artifact of Nile Valley civilization or Africa in general. This revelation created a new dilemma for the European claimers of Egypt. They were saying, in effect, figuratively speaking, a child gave birth to himself, then created his own mother. Tony Browder's book, Now Valley Contributions to Civilization, is about correcting some of these misconceptions so the reader, in fact, can be introduced to the Now Valley civilization in order to understand its role as the parent of future civilizations. As the parent of all future civilizations. When we speak of Nile Valley civilization and its contributions, it must be considered that we are not talking about Egypt alone. We are referring to a strip of geography that extends over 4,000 miles into the body of Africa and that touches on a multiplicity of civilizations in Africa. Now, I wanted to go to something that was quoted in the book just to give you a taste of what he's using as evidence to prove that Egypt was not a European creation. Between 1775 and 1800, Göttingen established the concept of the science of antiquity, upon which future universities would build. The slanted and distorted research which emerged from this institution established much of the intellectual framework within which later research and publication within the new professional disciplines was carried out, states Burns. The myths that were created at Göttingen had held sway in academia for more than 200 years. Very few scholars took serious any theory that conflicted with the accepted belief that the ancient Egyptians could have been anything other than Caucasian. But in early 1970s, these biases were scholarly, intellectually, and scientifically challenged by two sons of Africa, the late Senegalese multidisciplinary Dr. Cheikhante Diop and his associate, Dr. Théophile Obenga. Dr. Diop and Obenga both presented papers at the Cairo Symposium, which unequivocally destroyed the myths of black race inferiority. From January 28th through February the 3rd, 1974, the United Nations Educational, Scientific, and Cultural Organization, which is UNESCO, the world organization that establishes what world history and the different sciences in the world are, sponsored this symposium, which was held in the capital of Egypt. The symposium was attended by 20 of the most prominent Egyptologists in the world who assembled to debate, among other topics, the race of the ancient Egyptians. Dr. Diop was a brilliant scientist who held degrees in Egyptology, physics, linguistics, and anthropology. He also was regarded by his contemporaries as the pharaoh of African studies. Dr. Diop presented a paper entitled Origins of the Ancient Egyptians and argued irrefutably that there were 11 categories of evidence to support the thesis that the ancient Egyptians were indigenous black Africans. Dr. Obenga's paper was entitled The Peopling of Ancient Egypt and the deciphering of the Moronic script. He provided data which confirmed the existence of substantial linguistic relationships between the ancient Egyptian language and the traditional African languages. The papers presented by Diop and Obenga were virtually unchallenged by the other scholars present, which prompted the following comment from a reporter attending the symposium. Although the preparatory working paper sent out by UNESCO gave particulars of what was desired, not all participants had prepared communication comparable with the painstaking research contributions of Professor Sheikh Anta Diop and Obenga. There was consequently a real lack of balance in the discussion. In other words, they didn't have nothing to say because they could not disprove what those two brothers did. And I wanted to bring them up because those are some more heroes that we may not necessarily know about because they weren't in the Americas, but they were great heroes to give us back our history. And so, Brother Marvin, you know I took a while today, but I appreciate it.
All right, Brother George, thank you so much for a powerful presentation. Knowledge is power, my people. Knowledge is power. Get yourself a book from any of the historians. Read them, acknowledge them, understand them, and continue to use that as tools for empowerment. All right. So thank you, Brother George, for that. Now we're going to move on to Steps Toward Community Healing. We have Dr. Ron going to be in just a moment. Brother George, are you there?
Yes, sir.
All right. Just want to welcome you back in, and we're going to bring Dr. Ron in. Dr. Ron, are you there?
Yes. Can you hear me?
Yes, sir. Welcome to the show. How are you today?
Hey, I'm doing great, and you know, I'm glad to finally connect with you, brothers, on this powerful platform you've created.
All right, so we're talking about steps toward community healing today, and we know that you're doing a marvelous work in the community. You've done it for years. So can you tell our audience a little bit about yourself and then the work that you came here to talk to us about today?
Yeah, first of all, you know, again, I'm glad to be here today. A little bit about myself is I was born in New Haven, Connecticut, to Lucy Gooding, Lester Gooding. You know, I'm a grandson, a great-grandson, a brother, a father, a grandfather. And I moved to Virginia in the 70s to go to Virginia State University, where I studied microbiology and met my yoga teacher, my guru, Dr. Janeshwar Upadhyay. And I also started my secondary education, I would say, because even though I went to an HBCU, there were certain gaps in the curriculum. And Brother George mentioned, you know, one of the great scholars that helped me understand and fill the knowledge gap around the great contributions of Africans to human civilizations, because that was left out of my training. And through my journey, my educational journey, I've studied trauma healing, restorative practices, restorative justice, mindfulness, yoga, and art, also science. So I bring different perspectives to this topic of community healing and the steps towards community healing. And, you know, there's more about me, but I'm really glad to be here to talk about this topic today.
Okay, thanks, Ram. So let's talk about for a minute the steps that you've taken in terms of helping the community heal. What's some of the things that you've been working on and some things that you're actively engaged in right now?
Well, some of the steps that I've taken started in the public school system. So as an educator, I recognized firsthand how African males, young black boys, were being disproportionately disciplined suspended, expelled. But one of the first things that I started after introducing yoga to my high school students, I started a program for black boys. We called it African Males, to address the different challenges they were facing in school. And one of the most important parts of that curriculum, that program, was African history and African American history, as well as holistic health, entrepreneurship, and other areas. Then I got involved in addressing the root causes of gun violence and the trauma caused by gun violence. So the next step was creating an entire methodology around working with youth to help promote nonviolence. And right now, I'm in the midst of organizing a coalition of different organizations to bring restorative justice to Richmond on a wide scale. So part of that restorative justice work deals with creating spaces for healing circles, community building circles, circles to address conflicts between different members of the community.
Okay, great. What are some strategies that you're actually adopting and implementing in the community?
Okay, so let me just kind of talk about when we're talking about community healing. Let's just talk about what is healing, or what. Let's start off with what is health, so that we have a common definition that we can all work from. And so one of the things that, or one of the important points to bring up about health, is that it's more than just not being sick. That we cannot have any symptoms, right? And that doesn't mean that we're in a state of health. Like, I may not have a temperature, I might not have a sniffle, I might not have a runny nose, I might not have a headache, but that doesn't mean I'm in a state of health, because I can be infected with a virus, or I can have cancer before I even know that I'm affected by either the, you know, uncontrollable cells growing in my body causing cancer, or that, say, for example, I'm getting ready to succumb to COVID. Like, before you know, or before we know that we're sick, there's a period where we don't know we have symptoms. So health, I would look at health as it's more than not being sick. It's a complete state of being physically, mentally, emotionally. I would also say spiritually and socially well, a state of physical, mental, emotional, and social well-being. So, and adding on to that, if I'm healthy and you're not healthy, then that cancels out me being healthy, because we're connected. So all of us need to be in a state of well-being in order for us to be healthy. All right? So health.
I like that. I like that.
When all of us are healthy, when all of us are thriving, then another thing I want to bring up is, so what are some of the determinants? What are some of the reasons for our lack of health as a community and as individuals making up the community? And I would focus in on three different areas: the historical determinants, the biological determinants, and the environmental determinants. So those three factors: the historical context, our biology, and our environment. And looking at our conditions and our symptoms and our state of poor health in this country, we could go all the way back to the 1600s and look at the impact that chattel slavery had on us as a people, had on us as individuals. And that chattel slavery was devastating to our community because of the way the whole system was set up and the disregard for hygiene, for nutrition, for psychological, spiritual, and emotional health. After chattel slavery, which we're still dealing with the after effects of that, now there was convict leasing. So this whole system that was in place continued to produce conditions or force us into conditions that were not conducive to our health. Conflict leasing, slavery by another name, black codes, Jim Crow and redlining. This whole post-apartheid experience that we've had here, mass incarceration. Just a few years ago, racism was identified as a public health crisis because of the impact that it's had on us as individuals, institutionally, and societally, right, as a society as a whole. So for decades, for generations, we've been dealing with the same type of conditions, whether it's educational inequities, health disparities, differences in life expectancy based on where we live, violence, gun violence, homicide that affects our communities at much higher rates, the wealth gap, so many different conditions that we generally will look at and as we're trying to understand the state of our communities, we'll look at educational inequities, for example, and stop right there instead of going into the root causes of these educational inequities or these educational imbalances or this educational oppression that goes all the way back, that's rooted in the whole plantation system, the chattel slavery system, where it was unacceptable, it was against the law for us to get an education. And although we fought to get the right to education, right, in terms of being able to go to public schools, etc., there has not been a time within this historical continuum where we've received or we've had equal access to high-quality education. So the first step in considering all of these different factors or these determinants and how they impact our community and they impact our physical, mental, emotional, spiritual, financial health is creating spaces where we can come together as a group, as a collective, to talk about our particular issues with each other, to share insight and energy with each other, and to defy the lie of white superiority and embrace the truth of black humanity. And so one of the different approaches that I've been working with in connection and collaboration with the Community Healing Network, the Association of Black Psychologists, and the Association of Black Social Workers is something called Emotional Emancipation Circles. These Emotional Emancipation Circles are spaces for people of African descent, for black people to come together in a circle process where you don't have to have a psychologist or a trained or certified or licensed practitioner leading it. It's something that we all can do. And these emotional emancipation circles are healing spaces to deal with the racialized trauma that we've endured and that we're still experiencing in our black and brown bodies. So that's one thing. Community healing circles based on addressing in our own space that we create what it means to undergo and be affected by systemic racism. And we have strategies and tools that we use. I'd rather say toys, though. We have strategies and toys that we use to explore the impact of racism on us physically, mentally, emotionally, spiritually, and also to build our resistance, to build our immunity to racism. So emotional emancipation circles is one. Community building circles, too, are important, right, where we focus on relationships. We focus on relationships in the spirit of Ubuntu, I am, because we are. So community building circles is another approach that I've been using. Community building, community healing. And within the community healing circle, I've been looking at community-based trauma healing. I went to Africa and studied an approach called Healing and Rebuilding Our Communities that was developed to deal with the post-genocide violence, where Hutus and Tutsis came together to address, to acknowledge the harm and the violence, to accept responsibility, and then to work on ways to heal that trauma and heal that pain. So I think you Brother Marvin, you've been involved in the HIROC trainings. So it's kind of like it's kind of like bringing together different frameworks into this community healing process. So it goes beyond just the trauma-informed care approach, which focuses on the individual, to a more healing-centered engagement approach that deals with how we relate to each other collectively. Because the trauma that we've experienced wasn't inflicted on us, or wasn't, it didn't affect us just as individuals. It affected us as a collective. So one of the things that I see in terms of like, or kind of in alignment with what I heard you talking about and Brother George talking about, is transforming our consciousness, raising our consciousness, elevating our consciousness so that we see the lie, we defy the lie, and we reconnect with our roots. And through elevating our consciousness, that opens our mind, that opens our third eye, that opens our heart to understanding the root causes of why we are in the condition that we're in today. And it changes our mindset so that we can work collectively, so that we can embrace principles like the Nguza Saba, and principles like Sawu Bona, which is I see you, we see you, that basically we can reclaim our culture and we can go from a state of struggling, being challenged, to thriving as a people. And I definitely agree with both of you in terms of like what Marcus Garvey says, that we will recapture, or not even recapture, that we will regain our state as an enlightened people, and we will once again astonish the world. And I think it starts off with us connecting in these collectives, these small groups of circles, healing circles, where we have an opportunity to share our stories, get support from each other, build a bond, and work collectively to heal ourselves and heal our nation and or heal our communities. And one of the other aspects of it is, too, is acknowledging what our ancestors went through and what the pathway that they left us, you know, the achievements that they've made, so that we can, like, undoubtedly, undeniably connect with that spirit of resilience. I call it massive resilience. And that mindset, changing our mindset, and working in the community also to leverage these institutions like the schools. So, you know, what's happening in the community is affected by what's happening in the schools, and what's happening in the schools is affected by what's happening in the community. So I think it's a collective effort.
True.
To really focus on how do we start connecting each other, working together with each other. And I think circle processes, emotional emancipation circles, community healing circles, community building circles are the foundation. It's like they are the cells for, or they're like the antibodies that we build to increase and enhance our immunity to combat the effects of systemic racism and global racism.
That's some powerful information, Dr. Rum. I'm sure there are a lot of individuals out there. You know, I got a few texts saying that they wanted to ask a question, but I'm going to have to hold the questions until after our second presenter speaks. So, Dr. Rum, did you have any closing comments before we move on?
Yeah, I think just to kind of sum up what I'm saying, because that was a lot of information, is that we have the power to transform our condition by working collectively and using the knowledge and the skills and the practices that have been laid out for us. And one of the best ways for us to do that is to get together in community healing circles where we have a safe, liberated space to empower ourselves.
I like that. I like it. All right. Before we leave, Dr. Rum, make sure you give out your number about the healing circle information. But we're going to move on to Sister Krista. Thank you, Dr. Rum, for that piece and all the information. Again, we're going to get that contact information to you before the end of the show. But
okay.
Now we're going to go over to Sister Krista Ellison, who is director of FOE, Freedom Over Everything. Sister Krista, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Welcome to the show. How are you?
I'm good. And thank you so much for having me.
Good. So thank you for joining us. And again, we're talking about the steps to community healing. And Dr. Rum laid out some of those emotional emancipation circles that we need to heal from the trauma. And you are working on a different end. So tell us a bit about FOE and that freedom that you're working on over everything. Tell us a bit about that.
Yes. So I work with a number of prisoners in the Department of Corrections. I'm the community liaison for an executive director over Freedom Over Everything, which is an organization that was established by three incarcerated men currently serving time of corrections. While serving their time and praying for a second chance, they have created an organization to establish comprehensive prison reform programs to give other incarcerated men and women the opportunity to reach their fullest potential. Freedom Over Everything's mission is to utilize a holistic approach in rehabilitating by providing structured programs and services to those who are preparing to be released, coupled with ongoing around support for counseling, education, and reuniting with their families. Their approach is to make families whole again. By partnering with the organizations, I have my aim is to reduce recidivism, homelessness, unemployment opportunities. We do workforce development classes on Mondays, Tuesdays, and Thursdays through a partner organization. And for those who are also just putting their stuff up with different addictions. We're trying to raise awareness in all communities. You know, a lot of times the men come home and they're not welcome back to the communities of HUD and RHA. they're blocked out because it's built just for the women, but we're trying to incorporate the men to be foot soldiers for the community so they can also help with single-family homes and reach the teens as well. I also wanted to touch on some things that Dr. Rome spoke about how we're all divided, and I look at things from a mental standpoint, physical standpoint, and a spiritual standpoint. So mentally, we, the people, you know, us black and brown people, we're asleep. We're either caught up in someone else's entanglement or who's black, who on television, on TV distractions.
Right,
we get, and in our school system, we have poor education. And we have a European education and not our own. So physically, I feel like, like you spoke on mental health, physical health, we don't have our, you know, we come from Africa where God said what he made in the land was good enough for everything. So why do we continue to take man-made medicine when God had already created everything and put it in the ground for us? So physically we need to get back to our own medicine, our own plan of care, and then spiritually, we don't know who we are. I had an African from Ghana ask me, where am I from? And I couldn't tell him where I was from. And he just hung his head back. His head dropped like he was more sad for me than I was. I was confused. And he was sad for me. And I was, why are you sad for me? He said, because you don't know who you are.
Right.
So that hit home. That hit deep for me. So a lot of times these men that are incarcerated, I challenge them and they challenge me too. And we put our heads together on plan of actions to rehabilitate themselves, and not only and mentally, spiritually, and physically. So that when they come home, they will know who they are. They can pick and choose where they want to be. We're fighting for dual citizenship. I mean, we're trying to get them dual citizenship for those who don't want to be here, can't be here, and so forth.
I like that.
There's nothing left here for them. And my personal fight in all of this is that I'm a woman. And, you know, a lot of times we listen to the radio and say, it's cute to be independent. It's cute to have your own. That is not the case. When Beyonce sings that song, and after she's finished singing, she goes right home to Jay-Z. She has a whole family.
All right, now.
So put that in a woman's head that we should be independent and we don't need a man. That's far from the truth. Oh, I pride myself on including men in my family, you know, showing my children, I have three girls, good, strong men, you know, surrounding them with balance. We have, you know, we have to have balance in our families. We're left out here to be raped, beaten, talked down on, and looked at as an object. So we have to really restore the relationships between men and women in a lot of ways.
True.
Yeah.
So those are the things that, you know, these men are incarcerated. They have had workshops. Voting is another thing that, you know, they have participated in last year. We made up ballots for them to have a marked voting poll behind the wall, so they'll know how to vote, who to vote for, who your legislators is in your city, who your councilman is, and you just don't vote for the president, because the president don't clean up your community, the president don't clean up your streets. You know, there's order, so you have to follow the chain of command when it comes to voting. Other topics that, you know, we go on is just making a family, like I said, making a family whole again, how to sit at the table and eat as a family. These men have come up with flashcard games and questions at the table to have more family engagement when, you know, eating at the table. So there's a lot of things that, you know, we've held over 6 rallies thus far. We took our rallies on tour to not just be in Richmond, Virginia, where I am, but we have been to Lynchburg, Roanoke, Newport News, and where else did we go? I can't think of the last one. But yeah, we've been traveling around to have these in Petersburg. I'm sorry, and we've been traveling around to have these rallies, so that we can make sure that this is a Virginia thing, not just a Richmond thing. And men and women that are incarcerated is more than welcome to participate in the membership of Freedom Over Everything to help qualify themselves for parole. Is what these men and women are doing.
May I ask you a question, Kristen?
Yes.
You mentioned something when we had the conversation the other day that the way that society has, or the system has set up for the release and reentry into the community. Can you tell me a little bit about, you know, that program, you know, transitioning from prison to back into society? They have programs.
So what we have done is the same program that these men qualified themselves for parole to be let out of prison and to, you know, make sure that they hold each other accountable is the same programs when they come out and they join Freedom Over Everything. We still want to continue to hold these men accountable for, you know, you're just not going to do enough to just be freed, but you continue on. It's a lifestyle. We have to, and we all should hold each other accountable. You know, that's how you show real love to one another, is correct, by correcting one another and by holding each other accountable. So we want to put these programs into reentry houses to make sure that these men are still taking the necessary steps and they are doing community engagements, community speaking, and taking someone else under their wing. And, you know, I think everyone should be a mentor to someone. I don't think that your knowledge, you know, a lot of times people want to be the first. Oh, I was the first one to do this and I was the first one to do that. That's fine and dandy, but when you get to the age of, you know, for example, Judge Sheffield, he was one of the black first judges in the state of Virginia, I want to say.
Right.
And Judge Sheffield died, and no one knew. He was part of my brother's case, and a lot of people didn't know, you know, that he was sick and that he was even dying. And I felt like he did I have to say, a dishonor. He was a great man, but he did this dishonor of not passing the torch. He took it with him.
Mm.
So to bury your torch and not pass it along, it's, you know, it's something that I feel like is something that we should no longer do, something that we have to be in the act of, okay, I was the first to do this, but who can I pass this on to? I'm in my 80s and I'm still getting up on stage, still preaching in the church, my churches. And then when the pastor passes away or when a speaker is no longer, they have to round around and find somebody else the board who has to elect someone else, or you have to interview other people to do what your pastor did. It should already be somebody in place for that.
That's right.
That's true.
So I don't.
It's leadership development.
Right. It should always be, you know, there should be no gaps it should be a continuation. Just like Dr. Sebi, you know, he had his medicine and he left to his sons, and his kids are carrying on that medicine and that way of healing, you know. So it just don't say, oh, we're no longer going to get healed because Dr. Sebi is now dead and he's gone on. No, his name and his legacy lives on.
Man, he's got quite a few students too, Krista.
He does. I have a
girl. Yeah.
Yeah, I have a girlfriend that was over there in Honduras with him, and she's here now. She's, you know, at medicine. She does the same thing. She's carrying on, you know, what she knows.
Yep.
All right. Let me throw this in. It's Empowerment Saturday. We got Dr. Rom here and Sister Krista talking about steps to community healing. If you want to call in, we're going to go to our Q&A time now. 845-277-9250 is the number to call if you have a question or a comment. Brother George, do you have anything before we go to Q&A?
No, sir. I'm ready for it. I'm ready for Q&A. I want to hear the questions, and I want to hear the answers.
All right. I'm bringing back Dr. Rom. Dr. Rom, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
All right. Thank you. Thank you. It's question and answer time. Again, it's an open question forum, and you can pick and choose which one, or you can ask questions to both if you like. If you have questions, again, 845-277-9250. I am going to 0148. Dr. Rom, I hope you don't mind. I got to bring him in this way.
Okay.
Should I do it, Brother George?
Yes, sir.
All right, let's give it to him. Oh, yeah. Bring the question.
Bring it! What?
Here we go. 0148. You're live. Sister Krista and Dr. Rom. You have a question or comment?
Hi.
Welcome to the show.
Good afternoon. Quickly, how is it that we as a community, we as black people, got away from being self-disciplined? Somehow or another, everybody else has disciplined us, but we in and of ourselves have not disciplined our own. How is it that we got away from that, and how could that be used towards healing?
Who is your question directed towards?
Dr. Rom, most particularly.
Okay. So I appreciate the question, and it's raising some other questions for me because throughout the years, we have been, I think, some of the most disciplined people in order to accomplish the things that we have, considering what we went through. And if I understand your question correctly, I would answer it by just saying that the pressure on us has been unrelenting and ongoing. So for every step we take to make progress,
it's true.
There's this force that tries to push us back. For example, the impact of the crack epidemic on our community devastated the family structure. Terribly devastated the family structure. Before that, there, you know, were policies and practices put in place to constantly try to disrupt our unity. And, you know, we still maintain unity. One of the things that shows how we're connected as a people is the way that we respond to a police shooting of an unarmed black man is different from the way other people, particularly the white community, responds. A lot of times the question comes up, why do we feel like, say, Trayvon Martin's death or Tamir Rice's death or George Floyd's death, Ahmaud Arbery, Breonna Taylor, and the list goes on. Why does it seem like we're losing a member of our own family when that happens. So our discipline is constantly under attack. And one of the things that we have to get back to is using our cultural element to build our communities, build our nation. We have to, you know, like, acknowledge that a lot of the trauma, a lot of the things that we're going through that is causing individual harm and individual issues where we're even causing harm to our own family, we need our own approaches. Like, some of the approaches that are used to supposedly help us come from a Western European framework.
True.
That focuses on,
true,
say, the individual, or focuses on diagnosing problems without taking into effect epigenetics or collective harm or generational harm. So one of the things that we really have to get back to is, first of all, that positive mindset of not just what's wrong with us, but what's right with us. Not just what we're not doing, but what are we doing? And then connect with each other, and in those emotional emancipation circles or those community healing circle spaces, start to, you know, work together to manifest what is the best of us.
Thank you, Dr. Rom. Just an advisory, we're going to 3:30 today, so this will be an hour and a half show. Thank you, Dr. Rom. Great answer. Hope Dr. Rom answered your question, and we appreciate you calling. Brother, we're going to go to 9266. 9266, question and answer period. Dr. Rom and Sister Krista are on live in Empowerment Saturday. Welcome to the show.
Good afternoon. Can you hear me?
Yes. Welcome.
Okay. Thank you. I have a question for Dr. Rom and Sister Kristen. For Dr. Rom, what has been your biggest challenge with you working in the schools? What has been your biggest challenge getting through to the young people? I know now their mindsets are a lot different now. So I'm curious to know what seems to be your biggest challenge getting through to them. And then for Sister Kristen, my question for you is, what has been the success rate of your program? Because your program sounds awesome. And so I'm just wondering, you know, in the process, do you retain more of the guys that come into your program, or do you happen to lose some? And then when you lose them, or if you have lost any, What do you see is the problem with you losing them? Because what I'm going after with both programs is, how do we retain our young people and our men, or our people, period, and
right,
not lose them? How do we keep them and keep them from going back or going into that life that takes them in that wrong direction or that opposite direction? And I think that's my question. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, sister. Thank you for calling. Dr. Rom, you're up.
All right. I would say, like, my biggest challenge as an educator has been trying to engage students when I'm using a prescribed curriculum that's based on, like, everything that Western or that white people have accomplished. Like, for example, teaching chemistry. If I'm teaching something that's abstract that the students can't relate to, and then all of the people that are acknowledged don't look like them, that right there creates a challenge, right? Because then it's like I'm part of this system that is really telling them that they don't measure up. So I think that's a challenge. And the way around that challenge has been to find ways to teach and connect with the students that they could relate to, and to be there even though there's pushback or even though there's conflict, so that they know that my heart is there and that I'm consistent. So, for example, like bringing drumming and drama and dance into science or into the chemistry curriculum, using, you know, drumming and dance to teach about chemical bonding, to teach about, you know, different principles so that in addition to getting the lesson across, I'm also building a relationship with the students, right? And being unafraid to take that risk to step out of the restrictions and take it to a higher level using, like, culture to uplift all the students in my classrooms, and knowing that if we go for the mountaintop, we're definitely going to reach the minimum standards of SOLs or that plateau because we're rising for something higher. And I think as long as what we're offering the youth is relevant to what is happening in their lives and we allow them to be productive and we lift up their voice, we're not going to lose them. And we'll be able to plant seeds that bear fruit for generations and generations and generations.
All right. Thank you, Dr. Rahm. Sister Krista.
Yes. We have successfully graduated over 30 men out of our program that were still incarcerated. The program was, started in prison. And then those 30 men, sometimes they have to be moved and shipped to other facilities. And so they, once they spread it out, or some of them still in there, they held other men accountable. And it's just a trickle-down effect. What they've learned, they teach to the next group. So they, once they graduate, they become the teachers. And then some of them have been released. And I have had those men come and speak at my rally. Paul Taylor, for one. I'm not sure if you all are familiar with Paul Taylor. He's in the community. I have Shaquille Ali. I have Brother Q, who does the spoken word. I have Brother Sean, who has he does our T-shirts. So the gifts that these men have been given and blessed with, and the dreams that they've dreamed while they're in prison, once they were released, we challenge them to continue on, and we promote their businesses outside. We've had, a couple of months ago now, we had a returning citizen banquet, which we had to do it in two sessions because we had such a packed house from the first one. We had to do a second one in the same night. Guys came home. They have artists. They've written books. They've written poems. They have their own businesses. They open up their own gym. I have a brother who just opened up his own gym. And then, too, we also, I have workforce development classes. And we also have a book bag to briefcase initiative. So book bag to briefcase initiative is they start off with a book bag. In their book bag is portfolios, resumes, and LLC. So once they decide what they want to do, and we have ties in the book bag, we have cufflinks in the book bag. So once we get them on their way, once they have graduated and they have successfully opened their business, we present them with briefcases to continue on. And they're challenged to go back, and a lot of these guys know, they live with these men for over 20 years, for a period of time, so they have gained a brotherhood, and they reach back to the guys who didn't make it home, and they still hold them accountable. You know, idle time is the devil's workshop, right? We all know that. So a lot of times we try to challenge these men. Some of them fall by the wayside. Some of them are having life sentence. Well, the founder of my organization, he has a life sentence. He should not have the desire to help nobody. He should have a I don't care attitude. I'm preparing myself for death. But he wrote up this whole program strategically by himself to help men you know, live. So one of them don't come home. The other founder, he doesn't come home to 2056. And then the last one, he doesn't come home to 2033. And all three of them with these longs and been down since 1996, have already over 2 years. So these men are selfless, and these men have already, you know, given their all into helping others, dedicate their time. Thankfully that Buckingham Correctional Facility has allowed these men to come into their office and write up these programs on their computers. You don't get at a jail facility to have an inmate come and use your computer to write up curriculums and programs to keep these men occupied. So kudos to Buckingham Correctional Facility, you know, for wanting to see to trusting in them. You know, they freely walk around when someone is, you know, hurting or someone has lost a loved one. They go to the cells of these men and ask them, can you go talk to this guy right here, because this guy just lost his mother or lost his loved one due to COVID. A lot of these guys have committed suicide due to COVID, losing loved ones. That was their only and last hope of coming home. So they have reopened the door of hugging one another, interacting with one another to, you know, just to make sure that everyone is okay. The ones that do slip away, you know, I turn my back on any of them. I talk to them and I say, you fall 10 times, you get up 10 times. You know, I was a caregiver when we had the recession ourselves in 2008, 2009, and I went in as a massage therapist for Sunrise Assistant Living, and then they did away with my position because they was cutting back on, you know, job positions, and I stayed as a caregiver. And I read the mail of one of my residents, the older lady, she was going blind, she's a white lady, she said, for all the bills put in this pile and for all the junk mail put in a separate pile, and my son will write out a check for the ones that are bills. So I'm reading her bills to her, and then I came across a piece of letter that had a headshot of a young white boy, and on that headshot it said, it was his graduation picture, but he was already in his 20s. But she took a nice picture on there, and she said, my son committed this heinous crime of robbery. If you feel free to, she said, if you could find it in your heart to donate $25,000, I'll make sure he never commit another crime again. And she told me, she said, put it in the pile, my son will write out a check for him later. So that day I vowed to never throw another one of my brothers away again.
Wow. Wow. Thank you, Sister Krista, for, wow, that's powerful. And again, these programs and services and the things that we're discussing here is about healing, right? And those steps that we need to take, but it's also covering each other and protecting each other, those things that we really need to do. So thank you, Dr. Rahm, for that. Let's go back to the lines. 1-8-8-1, you're on live with Dr. Rahm and Sister Krista. Do you have a question or a comment? 1-8-8-1, you're live. All right, well, maybe they're just listening today. Let's move down to 3347. 3347, do you have a question or comment for Dr. Rahm or Sister Krista? Welcome to the show. 3347. All right. Well, let's try 1471. 1471.
Greetings.
Welcome
good evening, brother.
Do you have a question or comment? Hey,
yes,
good evening. How are you?
Wonderful.
Welcome.
How are you doing? Good. Another powerful conversation. I like the way you have framed this conversation, Brother Marvin, around the concept of healing. And obviously, that's more of what we have to do in our community. And so my question is to, I have questions for both, if I could. I don't know about your time, but I have questions for both of them, because both areas are extremely powerful and need to be done, particularly the one operating out of the correctional institution. You know, here in Wisconsin, that's one of the most horrified areas. We have more black men in prison here than anywhere in the country. And that's not something to say proudly, but it's a reality. And so I want to ask the sister first, if what do you use, what tactic do you use to get the prison officials who have to give you grant or access to the system? Do you use something special to do that, and how is it constructed in terms of your area? Because unfortunately, I missed what system you work with in what area of the country. So maybe you could kind of tell me that as well. But what special method do you use to gain access to the brothers and be able to do the program that you're doing? So that's my first question to her.
Well, we don't have any grants at this moment. They have been established since 2018. And these gentlemen, they're just three gentlemen who came up with a program, wrote it up, and started working it on, I'm sorry, 2018. They started it on their own. And they just started having, you know, they pass out flyers to one another, and they say, come to the class, come to the class, we're holding class, you know. And people gravitate towards these three gentlemen. These three gentlemen do Kwanzaa. They have, you know, different programs and different activities that they do with one another. So once that the guards were seeing how productive they were spending their time, they just, once COVID hit, everything was shut down. And then when COVID back up, the guards come back and say, can y'all start your program again? The guys are getting a little antsy. The guys are asking for y'all. So they just kind of started it on their own.
And what state is that? What state are you in?
I'm in Richmond, Virginia.
Oh, Virginia. Okay, great. Okay. Yeah. All right. Yeah, that's good, because sometimes that's a challenge, getting the state officials to understand that there's a need to go in and do some of those kinds of things. Like, you know, like you said, like the Kwanzaa celebration, Juneteenth celebration. There were many attempts that people have had to go into the prisons and try to do some of that, and they're obviously sometimes blocked. And sometimes they're open. It depends on, I guess, the official. But that was interesting. But I applaud you, and I definitely say to you, continue to keep that on. That's a vital area, vital area. And then to Brother Rahm, I want to ask you, is there a quick curriculum to those healing circles? Because I know that's a powerful area as well. Right now, I know there are several places throughout the country that are doing those healing circles, and they're trying to put them into place. So is there a curriculum that you have created that maybe would be accessible to some of the ones that we know here in Wisconsin and other areas that we're working on that you could give us?
Yeah, I think there's different organizations that have created curriculum that's more useful for our community. I would just say reach out to the Community Healing Network. Just Google Community Healing Network or Emotional Emancipation Circles, because I know right now they're doing these four-week intensives where you meet once a week to go through this real powerful training, and that gives you the resources you need to start holding emotional emancipation circles or working with other people to hold emotional emancipation circles. And you could also go to my website to get more information and to connect with me. My website is Rahm, R-A-M, Bhagat, B-H-A, GAT.com.
Okay. All right. Yeah, because you're right. And there are several areas specifically that are trying to employ the healing circles. I know I'm working with a fatherhood group, and these are areas to hopefully awaken fathers to become, well, not to become, because a lot of them are, but to embrace working with their children closer, as well as with the mother of their children in a closer way. So it's healing circles, they feel, the organization feels, it's one of the best ways to do that. And so, great. I'm just glad to hear that. So, Brother Marvin, that's my two questions. Excellent job. Excellent job.
All right. Thank you, Dr. Rogers. And Dr. Rogers is going to be coming back in a few weeks to talk about Carter G. Whitson some more. So we'll get the back end on that. Thank you, Dr. Rogers, for calling in.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
You're welcome. Now, Dr. Rogers could be doing a whole lot of other stuff, folks. He could. But he's tuning in, listening to the show, and asking questions as well. That's powerful. Most speakers don't want to come and listen unless somebody's listening to them. So I appreciate your support, Dr. Rogers. Okay, brother, for Dr. Rama, Sister Krista.
Talking to me?
Yes, sir.
Oh.
Sorry about that, Brother George.
Yeah, I see, like, sometimes the name went out just as you said my name, so I apologize for that. But I'm really impressed with the work that y'all are doing, that y'all are still doing. And it's amazing, you know, that I don't think that our community is aware enough of how much work is being put in. Do either one of y'all have an idea of how we can better, because this show is not going to reach all of our people in this city. Do either one of y'all have something that we can do to spread this word more effectively to our people?
I'll jump in. First, I would not underestimate the power of the people that you're reaching, you know. And,
okay.
You know, you're planting seeds. Like, I've been looking forward to this opportunity for, I would say, months, right, to be on here with you. And we promote each other. We promote each other. And the main thing, too, is, the power of our minds, you know, the power of our minds to produce change in our individual life and collective life. Like, so this program that you have just lifted up as far as far and wide as it can go. And,
Yes. You
know, like, let's connect with each other. When I'm doing something, I share it with you. When you're doing something, you share it with me.
Yes,
let's network with each other. And I think by just expanding our consciousness, that unlimited consciousness of where our thoughts can travel across the ocean, our thoughts can travel, you know, like I could be thinking a thought that you pick up on, then we could connect. So let's get into that unlimited thinking. And then
yes,
I guess, you know, people might say, well, be practical, Ram. I mean, like, yeah, like, let's just share what we're doing and keep doing what we're doing and give it up to the Most High. Because,
yes, sir.
Yeah, like, give it up to the Most High, like, what we need, what we want, and let's just make it happen.
All right. Sister Krista, do you have any input into
it? You know, bridging the gap. Where you see gaps, you know, that needs to be filled, you know, I believe in resources, right? We all have the resources. And if you know somebody that knows somebody that knows somebody. And,
right.
You know, I would like to create a yellow pages for the community. So where if they say, I have going on in my house, and I can look in the pages and say, well, let me call Brother Rome. Rome is going to help with that. He's the guy for that job, because we all can't do it ourselves. So we need to create our own yellow pages for our community. I think that...
I like that. I like it.
And Brother Brown know me. My mind is like a train. Once it gets going, it's going, you know,
it's gonna it's very I'm very creative.
You know that people that want to ask y'all a lot of questions, you know, so that's you know, with a radio show, it's like limited because you want to allow people to, you know, to ask you questions
right.
and you can speak your mind.
So yeah, bridging the gap.
Sister Krista, I have a question for you. When, you know, there are a lot of families that, you know, have people who are in the system or incarcerated, and I'm sure there's some resources, right, or there's some things that just the general public should know about the experience, right? For those who never had a family member incarcerated before, what are some things families go through, right, that we as the broader community should know and learn and understand about what that is like for many of our families?
I call myself the punching bag, right? Because when these men aren't on the phone with me, they're venting. They can't vent to one another. They gotta stay macho. They can't cry because they gotta, you know, they don't want to look weak. So I am for 20 minutes because this phone call is just 20 minutes. The punching bag. So, for many men, and I have over 14 men on my call list. So, a lot of times when they call the loved ones, they're fussing, they're arguing, they find topics to even the smallest thing. It's not to take it personal, but just allow them their space to vent because you don't want them to catch another charge by, you know, offending someone else in there. So that's the biggest and most thing. And then financially, we have to stop feeding these systems that are not feeding these men. They get fed junk on a daily basis. That's why their health is deteriorating, and they don't have they get triaged, but they don't have medical in prison. A lot of these private prisons will not fund for medical.
Wow. Well, thank you, sister. You're doing some great work, and that work is so desperately needed. Continue to do the great work. I'm going over to Dr. Ron for a minute. My question for you, sir, is you talked about how many of the programs are not culturally relevant, and I think we need to put more effort and more emphasis on really looking at the need for evidence-based, culturally relevant programs and services that really work for our people. Some of the work we have to do, there's a lot of work that's been done, the research is there, but what do you think we need to do to get that information or some of that research out into the communities and down into the program centers where the work is really needed?
That's a great question because, you know, the idea of evidence-based always comes up. And sometimes it's so ironic because the folks who put up these roadblocks and saying that we don't have evidence-based, they don't use the evidence that is available to base their decisions on. For example, year after year after year after year after year, the evidence shows that black and brown students are suspended at a disproportional rate, right, in schools, or are incarcerated at alarming rates. That's evidence that they have, which is not used to address the problem because the problem is a solution for the system. Mass incarceration is not a problem for the system. It's a solution. It's a continuation of getting free labor, basically, right? And for us, I think we have to move away from relying on a system that is set up with all of these pitfalls to keep us on the margins, to keep us on the margins. So, like, we have so much evidence, and we have so many experts out there that have created the frameworks that we can use, and then we can also adapt some of the Western frameworks to satisfy what we need. But, for example, like in dealing with trauma, for example, the way that trauma is used now, it's almost like a a negative. It is. It's a negative label
mm-hmm.
that is added to all of the other labels that our children are going through. Oh, they're traumatized. Oh, they're acting like this because they're going through so much trauma, right? So I think we need to look at evidence-based approaches like urban trauma, which really explains the condition and the situations that we're in. Urban Trauma by Maisha Akbar. Or Healing-Centered Engagement by Sean Jinwright. Healing-Centered Engagement asks a fundamental question. Instead of what happened to you, it's what's right with you, which is built on
Ubuntu.
When something happened to one of us in the community where, like, I would say, I know for me personally, there are things that have impacted me and affected my behavior, trauma, that have caused me to cause harm to other people. And in Ubuntu, what we try to do is instead of focusing in on the worst thing that somebody did or the bad thing that somebody did, is focusing in on what's good about them and building them up. You know what I'm saying? Like building them up instead of this unjust so those are like and what Resma Menakem has a book out called My Grandmother's Hand, where he talks about
Dr. Rama, I have to cut you right there. We're getting short on time. We got just a few minutes left, and I want you to share your information, your contact information, and also Sister Krista, we could do that before we have to wrap it up. So I thank you for joining us. Your programs and your activities are great. Share your personal contact information in case they need to get in touch with you.
Okay, so our Facebook is Nadia Abdullah Salam on Facebook. It's pretty much everything. And then our my contact information is Krista Ellison at ymail.com. Telephone number is 804-668-8801.
Yeah, my contact information on Facebook and Instagram. You can reach me at Drums No Guns Foundation, Drums No Guns Foundation, or at Dr. Ram Bhagat, at Dr. Ram Bhagat. And my website is rambhagat.com. And you can also email me through the website. I just want to thank you, brothers, for having me on today.
Thank you, brother.
Thank you, Dr. Ram. The work is so important, and we need to know, right, that work is happening in the community. And, again, the collaborations, right, that we can create, the networks that we can create that can be so effective at change, and particularly the healing of our people who desperately need it so much. So thank you, Dr. Ram, and thank you, Sister Krista, for joining us today. Brother George, you have any final comments before we get out of here?
Yes, it goes to show that we can work together. We can get two people to be interviewed on the same day and still accomplish a great goal. Thank y'all, both of y'all. Thank you.
All right, you heard it. It's the healing.
Thank you.
Thank you. So it's the healing, right? Emotional emancipation circles, right? And community building circles along with FOE. That's for everything, and that's what we need as we continue to work together in collaboration and partnership to change our future by our own hands and our own minds, not looking forward to anybody else to helping us heal ourselves. We must do the work. We must get together and collaborate. We need to commit to research. And we need so much to commit to love. And through that love, we can find peace, joy, and happiness. This has been Empowerment Saturdays, 365 days of motivation and personal empowerment for African Americans. You can't beat it. Thank you, Dr. Rom. Thank you, Sister Krista. Until next week, right? Tell a friend. It's our network. It's for our people. It's for African Americans. And again, until next week, peace and blessings.
Courage to read. Oh.
yeah.